Welcome to the Sick Network Podcast, a weekly podcast discussing current and topical issues affecting Sikhs across the global diaspora.
Hi all, and welcome to another episode of the Sikh Network Podcast. Today I have with me the usual contributors to the podcast, Jaz Singh and Devinderjit Singh, both advisors for the Sikh Federation and co-founders of the Sikh Network. We also have with us prominent Sikh activist Deepa Singh of Sikh Youth UK. So I'd like to welcome you all onto the podcast. Waheguru Ji Ka Khalsa.
Waheguru Ji Ki Fateh.
So it's been a couple of weeks since we've done a podcast, and again with the pace of movement and change and revelation upon revelation that's been coming out, we're almost having to play catch up on this. But we decided that this podcast is going to be very specific to UK and how all these recent revelations around transnational repression, thwarted murder attempts, assassinations, suspicious murders, how it all sort of comes together and where the UK stands on this. We definitely feel a concern here as UK citizens that the UK has not taken the same approach as their other allies, particularly in the Five Eyes, such as the USA, Canada, and even Australia. Have taken in terms of being vociferous and very vocal about how India has behaved. So this specific podcast is going to talk about the UK India collusion, if you want to call it. This relationship between UK and India obviously goes back, goes back several centuries, but we will take it back to when Sikh activism really took the front seat for the community here in the UK, which would have been 1984 and the build up to 1984. So several years to 1984, when we really started seeing UK India collusion and its impact on the Sikh community and Sikh activism. So I'm going to start off with Devinderjit Singh. Nations, it's not uncommon for nations to work together. I suppose they may call it collaboration, but its impact obviously on communities such as us, minority communities, is significant. So should we just go back to maybe the 1980s and how the UK-India relationship impacted the Sikh community?
I think you're absolutely right that countries will talk to each other and they'll collaborate. But I think what we're saying is they also collude. Collude gives that negative connotation. And they collude where it suits their interests for various reasons. And in 1984, we now know, and this is the thing about collusion, we only see small bits of that collusion ever coming out in the public. You know, even now, none of us know how much collusion goes on and how much communities are undermined. Now, if you look at the events of 1984, probably at that time, there were hints of the Indian government getting support from the UK, Israel, Russia. These were the sorts of countries that were being talked about. But there was nothing in black and white that you could point to. Therefore, in 2014, 30 years after the event, you know, the UK Cabinet Office papers came out by mistake, which showed the UK government had colluded, and I think those people listening to the podcast, you know, even to this day, just don't understand why Margaret Thatcher, who was the Prime Minister at the time, and very close to Indira Gandhi, wasn't advising Indira Gandhi to say, don't attack Siri Darbar Sahib. That's the last thing you want to do. You know, we have 500,000 Sikhs living here. That should have been what the UK Prime Minister of the day should have been saying, that this is a holy place where people of all faiths go to. And yet, what we learned from those papers was the UK colluded. They sent an SAS officer. And this is what we know. There's all the things we don't know about that yet. They still haven't released the report the SAS officer gave, which they still have. They've shut down release of further papers since 2014. And that's when I think the world, and particularly Sikhs in this country, woke up to the fact that Britain had not only assisted in advising, but probably provided training, arms that were used in the Darbar Sahib attack. And then it didn't stop there. We also learned that Indira Gandhi was then writing to Margaret Thatcher on the 30th of June, 1984, and saying, be aware of those Sikhs in a religious garb. And I think that has set the tone of the way India perceives Sikhs in the religious garb, i.e. those wearing a dastar, Amritdhari Sikhs, because they feared, which, you know, is probably what the purpose of this podcast is, collusion may take place, but as Sikhs, we're Sikhs because we believe in the truth, and the truth will prevail and it will come out. And that was the first instance in 2014 where the truth emerged. And then, to sort of very quickly moving on from that, for the last 10 years, we've had Narendra Modi and the BJP government. And it doesn't matter which who's in power, whether it's the Congress, the BJP, or whoever in India, is we had Narendra Modi coming to the UK in November 2015. And everywhere in the Indian papers, including the Daily Mail here, they talked about a dossier that Narendra Modi gave to David Cameron, who was the Prime Minister at the time, now is the Foreign Secretary. And that started naming individuals. Those individuals, like Avtar Singh Khanda, are no longer with us. Naming organizations, naming Godwaras in Birmingham, Glasgow, and elsewhere. And that's what emerged in the media. Now, I'll finish with one final thing on this. Dr. Jasjit Singh did a report, a government-sponsored report, sponsored by Crest, on the back of what Narendra Modi had given David Cameron. And even Dr. Jasjit Singh, who's doing an official report, when he asked Number 10 about the dossier, they denied all knowledge of it. And yet, it was just full of it in the media. And that's where, you know, people are not stupid. They say, how can they get so specific and name individuals? And yet, the UK government says, oh, they didn't give us anything. Why was he doing a report? And when he did the report and he concluded that the British state had nothing to fear from Sikh activists in this country, they have never threatened any British interests. If there have been issues, they tended to be within the community itself since 1984. And therefore, he said, there is no such thing really as Sikh extremism in this country. It's more Sikh activism. And that is actually a positive thing. So I think that the writing was on the wall in 2014 and 15, and we're seeing it now played out every single day.
Yeah, I mean, go on, Jeff.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, this is where it starts, right? And again, it came to the front for Sikhs, really, like, as Baji said, around post-84, but it's that cross between collaboration and collusion. And really, when things are done that are against what we call British values, that are against international law, British law, and at the detriment to Sikhs, that's when it becomes very serious and Kalusia. And we saw that, and we know this for a fact now, that in 84, the Indian government were pressuring the British government to silence Sikh voices on the BBC. We know that to be true. We also know it to be true that the government were putting pressure on the Met to stop Nagar Kirtans happening in London, to stop a march in November to mark the November genocide, stop that from happening. And these are our civil liberties within the law here. And that continued to stop the Shahidi tournaments that were happening up and down the country. There were requests and discussions in government cabinet to arrest and intern Gurdwara Pradhans. So when we think about, and people will see, and certainly Deepal will share some of the things he's been seeing. When we put this stuff out, people may think that it sounds conspiratorial, it's a bit far-fetched. This was happening 40 years ago and is documented in government papers. So to think that actually now that the lid has been lifted somewhat with what Justin Trudeau has put out there, what the US government has put out there, what the FBI has put out there, the CIA, this is just a real sort of hint of what was going on, and it's explosive. So now we need to really think back and join the two dots to say, here's what we know was happening in the 80s. Here's what we know was happening in the 90s when there was a lot of the complete police crackdown and the mass killings across Punjab. And there was a big influx of asylum seekers here to the UK. How were they being treated? To then actually those revelation papers coming out and the Modi dossier, putting the spotlight on, I would say, not only Sikh activists, but two categories. Those that were raising human rights and the abuse of human rights, and those that were also campaigning for independent Sikh homeland of Khalistan, because they became the target, not only of the Indian government, but also the British establishment as a whole. And I think that's some of the stuff that we're going to uncover. But this isn't new, I guess, is the key point. This has been happening systematically and consistently over a longer period of time when it suits British interest, or it's against British values, but it suits India's agenda. And Britain have been too quick to show appeasement. And this has been exposed by some high-profile cases. The ISYF ban in 2001 was a big example. This is post all of the Gelo armed struggle in the 90s and 80s in Punjab. For two Sikh organizations to be banned, prescribed in the UK, took everybody by surprise in 2001. And it wasn't until 2015 and 16 when those bans were, the ban on the ISYF was overturned, that it then lifted that veil of having British legislation to hide behind, that anyone who was linked to the ISYF was by default and by completeness a terrorist.
The veil got lifted and the ban has obviously been lifted. But I mean, it doesn't go away, does it? I mean, perception, it's still used out there, and it still keeps entering reporting, where they'll keep on bringing and referring back to ISYF, regardless of the legalities, and you know where it stands within British law. But I want to bring in Deepa now, anyway, because obviously Deepa's our guest speaker, and Deepa, you obviously being connected to current issues and situations and Sangat around the country. What are we seeing now play out? Obviously, you know, we've seen, you know, we're all glued to the news and, you know, we're quickly glued to our news feeds for these twists and turns that are currently taking place. But how is this impacting the arm sick on the ground? And what have you been seeing?
So as we've... as Dabindraj has highlighted, look, this isn't a new thing and people need to be transparent on this. It's not just since Modi's come. If you look what Jazz and Dabindraj were just talking about, 1984, it was a big turning point for Sikhs globally when they attacked the Dabar Sahib and the UK government colluded as part of that. in 1985, not just the 2001 bannings, in 1985, the UK government had a police officer entrap three Sikh activists from Leicester. He entrapped them. So I've read all those paperworks and documents. He posed as an IRA member. And from there, he entrapped them. And they set a precedent in 1985. So UK Sikhs would back down or think twice about any political activism. They set precedent then in 1985 when they entrapped those three, they set high jail sentences for them. They got 16 years and 14 years.
It was the Rajiv Gandhi assassination, so-called assassination plot.
And full entrapment. If you read those indictments, if you read all those paperwork, which I've done, I've spent a lot of time reading those paperwork, you can see how they entrapped these three Sikh activists. They could be just your average guy in this day and age. This is why I'm looking at it. This would be your average guy in this day and age, just talking about conspiracies or collusion, and they were entrapped. Does that make sense? So there was a lot that went on at that time as well. So if we bring it the similarities from those tactics, which are used now, again, in 91 to 96, Karamjit Singh Chahal was attempted to be extradited. 6 years on remand. That's a long time. So UK colluded there with them. And the Home Secretaries at the time were saying, nope, we're sending him. Like, nobody was on the Sikh activist side or listening to our side at that time. Then you bring them similarities to the current day. The illegal raids, like Dabindajit mentioned about the dossier being handed, dropping names, these cooked up stories that they're saying are happening in Glasgow Gurdwara and Birmingham Gurdwara and other Gurdwara. These sorts of things that the Indian government were writing in these reports and dossiers that they've handed in, that they are to target specific political Sikh activists in the UK who are actually openly speaking about Jarasi, speaking about human rights. Genuinely, like, you've got the Never Forget 84 website that was taken down. Juggy was targeted. Again, illegal raids because of the campaign that was set to protect Juggy in the UK. You know, there's court paperwork out there, which are official documents from this government, which have got Juggy's name on, with myself and others in court and were raided with. So I'll openly say that because I can, because I'm in that case. Whereas then you had the Operation Graf Badge, which was a joint collaboration in 2020, where they targeted four activists about activism. That was MI5 and Counterterrorism Unit in West Midlands. So West Midlands Police have been at the forefront of a lot of this collusion, not just recently, but historically as well. And I think it was an old Sikh Federation video that I saw. There was a conference and there was an MP from Slough who said, I'm speaking up against the West Midlands Police them days. So it's very interesting. I don't know if it was an MP. It was someone at a Sikh Fed conference in the 80s. And he was openly saying it. And that collusion between West Midlands Police Counterterrorism Unit and the Punjab Police and Indian authorities has not gone away. It's only got stronger. And one thing we've learned with the Canada revelations and the USA ones, that the UK are very silent. And the first thing David Cameron did was go out and shake Modi's hand when he got put into position again. And the way they're approaching us here is very sophisticated and smart, completely different to how everyone else is being targeted across the globe. UK,
I mean, you could say the shaking. I mean, the thing is, Cameron's visit may have been scheduled and there may have been, I'm just playing devil's advocate, and it may have been a coincidence that it took place. But what was specific about Cameron's tweet, I think, which was UK-Indian relationships have never been stronger with the current climate and the current issues that have come out globally, I think that was definitely a cause for concern, personally, as a British Sikh. And then again, you know, once it was raised in PMQ, Prime Minister's Question Time, and the way it was dismissed by Rishi, the PM, Rishi Sunak as well.
Yeah.
I think those kind of things, we do have to be very, you know, we've got to take those things on board and really look at the way the British establishment is framing our concerns and basically pushing them down almost immediately. So definitely cause for concern there. But,
but if you've just mentioned Rishi Sunak. Rishi Sunak has openly said that he thinks there's concerns of pro-Khalistan extremism. This is the language that they referencing to people like ourselves on this podcast and other Bantik activists out there who were just speaking up for human rights. They're saying this is pro-Khalistan extremism, PKE. They've used that and referenced that in Bloom Review. They've used... When we started this podcast, we were on about collusion. And the first thing that came into my head was in February this year, William Shawcross, who used to run the Charities Commission, now is a government, part of the official government advisor. He, in his Prevent Review, spoke specifically about a small minority who keep going on about collusion between UK and their Indian counterparts. And these people endorse, we call it Sikh human rights, they call it armed resistance or anti-government agenda. So they're specifically saying that in the Prevent. And that is that language and that Prevent Review is to specifically disrupt Sikh activists and Sikh activism in the UK.
I mean, if you look at it, right, this isn't, and we're going to come touch on recent incidences, and there's a, none of this is by mistake or by accident. If you go back to what Dabinjit mentioned by Dr. Jasjeet Singh's report, where he, and Crest is part of sort of under the MI5 banner, that there was no radicalization, there was no extremism, there was no terrorism from the British Sikhs. It just didn't exist. And we all knew that. But it was, I think it was November 2017, just after Jaggi had been abducted, we had a meeting with the DCLG, as it was then, which is local government, in which the faith ministers. And it was at that meeting that we learned that Sikh extremism was being investigated by the Home Office, separate. And the two incidences, when they were pressed, because this came out of the blue for us, and when we've pressed them on it, that why were these Home Office officials from the analysis wing present at a Sikh roundtable where we were talking about Kakar issues and representation and discrimination, etc. And I think the individuals there assumed we would all know because he was invited to give an update. And he then let slip or shared with us that this was because the Home Office had been instructed them to look into the Sikh two events in particular. One was the Anand Karaj protest at Leamington, which many will recall. And the second was at Birmingham, the Vaisakhi Nagar Kirtan that happens in Handsworth Park. And Deepa will know this better than most, was the fact that there was Khalistan Zindabad banners. So those two incidences were enough because there was nothing happening, and they had to create this veil or this fictitious threat. And then 2 years later, we had the Commission for Counter-Extremism in the UK. They published a report that was written by Sunny Hundle and Dr. Jasbir Jutti, which again raised a lot of internal Sikh issues and falsified information or were massively exaggerating personal disputes into national threats of extremism, despite their own data of that unit saying Sikhs were the least threat to the UK. And then we skip forward another couple of years and we get the Bloom Review that's published in May this year. But the work was done in around 2021 for that. That here he is now coining the phrase pro-Khalistani extremism, and again, massively exaggerated and inflated a threat to the UK. Yet there is zero, and we've had this from the Met, we've had it from CTU. There are zero of the 800 plus open investigations into counterterrorism. There are zero relating to Sikhs. There are no Sikhs arrested under counterterrorism. There are no pending investigations. And there is no threat. So if the threat doesn't exist, the cases don't exist, the suspects don't exist, why is there a phrase and a whole narrative being spewed by the top of government all the way to the mouth of the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, when he was in India and interviewed and said, we are looking closely into the threat of pro-Khalistan extremism. And to the Foreign Office, who have now got a joint desk where they've got Indian officials and UK officials looking at Khalistani activism. And even the final thing was, even this week, you had the British High Commission in Delhi calling on an interview, Alex Ellis, talking about how they're looking and dealing with pro-Khalistan extremism when there absolutely is zero evidence of any threat.
I think Dabindajit Singh wants to come on this. Yeah.
I think I'm going to try and sum up some of the things we've said to try and talk about here and now. I think the way I look at this is, if we look back at the last 40 years, the Indian government, of whichever political persuasion, has sometimes successfully colluded with the UK government to effectively target Sikhs. Whether that be the Darbar Sahib attack, and the next thing event I'm going to talk about is the deportation of Bhai Jaswir Singh in December 1984, because that came out in the Sacrificing Sikhs report. And the reason why I wanted to mention that is there is a file sitting in the National Archives on Bhai Jaswir Singh, which is sealed as a photograph in the Sacrificing. It's sealed for 100 years. So the 30-year rule, which has become the 20-year rule, that file will not come out for 100 years. And the reason why files are sealed for 100 years is because there will be names in that report of people that are currently alive that were probably informants. Now, were they informants of the Indian government? Were they informants of the UK government? And I think that is something that all of us, all Sikh activists, are talking about at the moment, is what's emerging is when these governments work with each other and they collude to target Sikhs, they every so often are successful. They were successful in 1984, successful with Bhai Jaswir Singh, successful with the banning of Sikh organizations, successful in the Leicester case in 1985, successful with Karmjit Singh Bahl. And actually, it doesn't matter who was in power, whether it was Labour or the Conservatives. But what we've seen more recently is the Conservatives, because of who they have, and one person we've not mentioned is Priti Patel. So even before pro-Khalistan extremism came up, she, as Home Secretary, went to the US and started talking about Sikh extremism, and we called her out. We then saw her direct influence trying to extradite British Sikhs, which failed. So every time they've tried to do something, we have countered it. And that is, I think, the difference. You know, whether it be Juggi, whether it be what's happening now, what's being played out now. So I think Sikhs, 40 years later, are much more alive to the games that the two governments play. And also the people they use from our own community to either, you know, get favors and therefore start talking. I wanted to switch to Punjabi, the government's bully. And that's been played out in the last probably 6 to 10 years. In fact, probably since the 1984 papers came out, because we know individuals at that time were effectively bought out by the British, you know, to try and kill that issue off. And very few of us said, we will not let that issue die. And I'm hoping a Labour government will come in and they will deliver a judge-led inquiry. But you know, we need to keep pressure on them. No guarantee they'll deliver it.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned, sorry to cut you short, but it's just while it's fresh in my head, about individuals who, you know, we can call them informants, or they become close to, you know, they provide information against the community as such. But what I do remember from being in a Gurdwara is that the Indian consulate are massive networkers. They will go out there, they network hard. You know, they'll go out there and they will come to the Gurdwara, they'll enter the Gurdwara as, you know, whatever, and, you know, try and they'll want to be there, they'll want to be involved. You know, they'll want to be, you know, when the Punjabi classes are giving awards, they want to be the award givers. They want to sponsor certain events and this and that. And that's how they sort of go out there into the community and build relationships. Now, obviously, we've got a lot of sycophancy and we've got a lot of that kind of culture in our community. So the elders will always warm to that. They like the whole idea of, you know, going to India House, perhaps having a cup of tea in there and building these networks for visas, whatnot, whatever they think benefits they're getting out of it. But the reality of it is that that long-term impact is that what we see is often then intel gathering or use of soft intel against Sikh activists. And I think people may not even realize that they're party to it and they're a part of it. But they actually end up in these situations quite easy. And that's a tactic. That's a tactic of India House. You know, they know how to do that. They know how to get in there and get into our circles.
And they like to keep us in fighting with that. And that's a very good strategy for the British. They want to do this, get this soft approach, come in as a, say, we're doing, I'll use the West Midlands Peace as a another establishment that does this. West Midlands Peace will come in, they'll set up recruitment stalls. Oh, we're trying to help the community, we're trying to do, but the real intentions are deeper than that. It is to, obviously, we've seen how Dabindajit just mentioned the countering, how people speak the Sarkari Boli and government's Boli to try and turn on their own community. Now, they use their own forces and establishments to, so they'll set up their own establishments to be their mouthpieces in the community to say they're the representatives that are speaking about the community issues. And that's the kind of countering narratives that we're seeing that are within the community are being used, what you just said, Manakamal Singh. They're being used. Some of them might know, some of them might not know. And it's a very grey area. But people are being used by the Sarkar to counter the Panthik's narrative and the Panthik issues and Panthik agendas.
And that's happening at a national level, right? And this is the a really important thing, I think, for a lot of our listeners to sort of try and understand, is that when you have natural, organic activism, which is what a lot of the Sikh struggle is, and we'll have disagreements with other Sikhs, and that's just normal part and parcel of different political viewpoints, different outcomes, different campaign strategies, etc. But that's usually contained and managed. What we've seen since the 84 papers, and I think that's a landmark date, that 2015 Modi visit, the revelations that would come out, we were pursuing even legal challenges. I know the Sikh Federation instructed lawyers, KRW Law, to legally challenge the government. There was an FOI, legal victory as well with the Information Commission, etc. But that was a landmark point because from then, the strategy changed with the government of how it was going to deal with Sikh organizations, Sikh Gurdwaras, and Sikh activists. And it started down this blacklisting of organizations softly to say, okay, we're not going to engage with these Sikh organizations, whether it was the Sikh Federation, whether it was Sikh Youth, whether it was Sikh Network, whoever it might be, that were previously engaging and dealing positively. And it started, but then it had this dilemma of, well, if it doesn't engage with the community, it looks like it's discriminating or ignoring them. So they started to prop up individuals. And they were easy to find. They're ones and twos, small groups that basically had the same viewpoint as the government, or were willing to change their viewpoint to whatever the government needed at the time. We saw this with organizations like City Sikhs, with the NSO, and with others who, depending on what the government wanted, they would then speak that narrative. And they were portrayed as representatives of the Sikh community disproportionately. And I think the most evidential part of this came in the census campaign, a 20-year-long campaign to have Sikh identified separately in the census, which we're now suffering from the consequences of not having that every day, especially through COVID. But we had, on one hand, you had, I'd probably say 80%, if not more, of the Sikh community. And speaking for them were the Sikh organizations and the 150 Gurdwara that wrote in. Then on the other hand, you had a handful of individuals with very little backing. But it was portrayed that the Sikh community is split, as in equally split, and there are a diversity of views. And that is absolutely not true, but it suits their agenda and their narrative. And that has what's continued today. So whenever the government want to act or the police act against the community, they will prop out these mouthpieces that are there to imply that actually it's just a fringe. And we've seen these terms, right? A fringe element of the Sikh community or a small minority that are peddling these views is not the mainstream. And I think that's something that we is now exposed and we need to call out more often.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, the thing is, a lot of these organizations as well, they're not assertive enough to put their viewpoints forward, but then they'll be framed, even though the other viewpoint has a majority. It will be backed by, for instance, gurdwaras. And, you know, it's been a national campaign, like the census was, in order to have that. You had 80,000 or 100,000, I can't remember now how many people actually registered under other and Sikh as a protest. Yet you will see this minority having more of a say, and you know the majority so demonized, and that's a strange one. I find that really bizarre. In this way, there's no balance in it at all.
It's not strange in the sense of, we go back to the issue of collusion. So let's unpack the census issue using the Bloom review. He says in a government report, the census issue was a Khalistan issue. And yet, everybody involved in the census, ONS, Cabinet Office, all say it was not a Khalistan issue. Now, we've said all along, census absolutely was not a Khalistan issue. It was about the rights of Sikhs in this country. It was about the census in England and Wales. It wasn't even the census in Scotland. And yet, in an official report issued this year, the Faith Advisor says it was a Khalistan issue because the Indian government made it a Khalistan issue with the UK government. That's where the collusion occurred. And then they need these puppets to show, oh, there's some opposition. So that they, in a way, they play Sikh off against Sikh. The reality is this was a Indian government pressure on the UK government to say, you can't let this happen. We cannot let you recognize Sikhs. Well, look, come on, let's wake up. They've never recognized Sikhs in the Indian constitution since 1950. So if they don't recognize Sikhs, saying we're Kesarpari Hindu, then it's no huge surprise they'll be pressurizing the UK government to say, don't give Sikhs this recognition that British courts gave us 40 years ago in Mandela versus Lee. So I just think, you know, sometimes we focus too much on the Sikhs that oppose. Often it goes back to the governments that are colluding, using these individuals, either knowingly, because those individuals think if I do this for them, they'll, you know, give me a gong or something. I'm just going to go back to just one example, though. In 1984, when the papers came out, people look back at some of the national newspapers in that first week. There was a headline, Sikhs will not take the sweetener of a change to the law on hard hats for staying silent on the 1984 papers. And I can name names of those people that effectively the government said the 2 days before the papers came out, we had a meeting at Guru Nanak Gurdwara Smedic where those individuals were saying the government are not prepared to change the Lord on high. It's a completely separate issue. Within 2 days of those papers breaking, the government was saying, oh, we changed the law. And that's why we took it to the national media and say, no, they're two separate issues. We deserve every right to wear the star in the workplace. But that's got nothing to do with the 1984 papers. We need the truth. We need that to come out. But those were the practical games that were played within hours of those papers coming out. So I think, you know, there are so many examples, but the one I wanted to really bring us back to is obviously the events since basically June this year, and with Justin Trudeau and with what's happening in the US and what's potentially happening in the UK is some of this collusion is being exposed. You know, if the Canadians had gone to the Indians back in August and said, look, we've got evidence of you being involved in the killing, assassination of Hardeep Singh Nijjar, and they said, oh, look, it's probably some rogue element, let's look into it, we wouldn't have had Justin Trudeau stand up in Parliament. We wouldn't have had the US Justice Department unsealing the indictment had it not been for an FT journalist talking to American intelligence. So every time something has emerged in the last few months, because intelligence officers have been talking to the media who pressurized governments, yet in the UK, whilst we've had some media interest, probably the most level of Sikh activism over 40 years and the most pressure on any government has actually been on the UK government about Sikh activists here. And I think that's the story still to be told in the coming months. And just, well, I'll finish on one thing is, I had a phone call from somebody the other day who, very genuine, almost said, ordinary Sikhs are really concerned. You know, people were concerned when Jaggi was abducted, tortured, and has been now in prison for more than 6 years. But with all this going on around hit lists, you know, cancelling OCI cards, people being stopped when they get to Delhi, people genuinely that travel to India, travel to, you know, to Punjab, visit their families, visit Gurukar, they're genuinely scared. Because when you get this collusion, and the government here need to wake up to that, you know, we are taxpayers. You know, I think all of us were born here. You know, this country, as much as ours, it is people that run the country. In fact, they work for us, and they need to start thinking about when people start to feel that their government does not protect them against effectively state terrorism by India. That's what we've had in the last 6 months.
And you're
then,
right.
It's really sad.
Yeah, and you're right in that that's a real concern for ordinary Sikhs, because everyone we meet, they're openly talking about that now. Oh, is it safe to go? I'm concerned. I'm worried. And then when you have another member of parliament, Mohammed Yassin, stand up, MP for Bedford, and ask the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, of what is he doing? What assurance can he give the British Sikh community about what's happening? How there are six British nationals on an India hit list. We have Avtar Singh Khanda suspiciously pass away and be killed. And there are other ongoing threats to Sikh activists in this country. What assurance can he give? And it was nothing. Mm. And he was like, we dismissed completely that we take the security of all of our citizens.
I know. I mean, that was the worst thing. Couldn't even mention the word Sikh.
Yeah, well, he didn't ask you about the security of everybody.
Yeah.
Right? He asked you about the Sikh community, and that's how far this government is from what the US and Canada have done. And I think what's behind that, and that, again, it underlines this word collusion, is what underlines it, and people will be asking why, is, and I think it's 100% fundamentally the complicity. So what is going on? So it's not just India doing this. Britain are working with them. And we're hopefully Deepak can share some examples here, because if it was, we talked about Jaggi, we talked about the raids and sharing of intelligence, which is illegal. It is illegal to share intelligence in this country that has been obtained under torture. Then we had the extradition, and now we're having a sort of covert restrictions put on, targeting of individual Sikhs in various different ways and tactics. And I think that's why this stuff isn't coming out, because Britain's filthy hands are on all of this. And they don't have the evidence to substantiate it and support it. So Deepa, share with us some of the things that you're seeing from your engagement with a lot of the Sikhs individually and some of the repressive tactics they're suffering.
No worries, I will do. So if we just touch on some of the things that you guys spoke about, let's talk about Shahid Bhai Avtar Singh Khanda. Why have West Midlands police at every hurdle made a roadblock so that investigation didn't go ahead? Why is it, let's have a look at Rishi Sunak, why are raw agents being exposed across the globe and expelled? And the one in the UK wasn't publicised, but the other governments have publicised that they've expelled raw governments. Why has UK kept that secret that just after Kunda's murder, a raw expert, a raw agent in the UK was expelled from India, from the UK, and it's only been recently brought to light. So that timing of that is crucial, and the silence of that is really having an impact on Sikh activists in the UK. We look at the roadblocks. I said there's every attempt, the West Midlands police and the coroners stopped any investigation into Kunda's murder. We look at association. Like, you're talking about the ordinary guy who may just be associated with certain organizations within Nordjwan, yeah? Stopped at airports, at border stops, under Schedule 7. This is ordinary people who work, run their businesses.
So, Deepa, explain Section 7, because obviously the listeners might not know what Section 7 is, and how are they being stopped, and what's happening? Because this is really important. And we're not just scaremongering. This is happening, and we'll talk about others. I mean, it's happening not only to Nordjwan, it's happening to elders as well, which I'm sure Dabindajit will want to touch on because he's witnessed it, right? So explain Section 7 a bit.
Section 7 was brought in a few years ago under the law, under terrorism laws, okay? And it's to stop anyone at border ports or airports. This is really to stop and investigate terrorism. That's what they say. But it is, they can expand this. It's like an elastic. They can expand this and use this for whatever they like. So your average person going abroad, they can, under Schedule 7, they can take your devices. They can take any electronic gadgets you have. And you, it's not like a police cell. So in a police station, you have to have your rights as legal. You're allowed a solicitor. You can wait for them before your interview and all of that. Under a Schedule 7, you have no authority. They can ask you whatever you want, and you have to answer. Second, you have to give your devices and the passcodes for those devices and those electronic devices. If you refuse, you will be charged for terrorism. Now, any average person, your ordinary guy, would have his family photos on there, his children's pictures in there, that he doesn't want to put out on social media. He doesn't want to put out or show anyone. And if people refuse, then you will be charged under Schedule 7, which is a terrorism act. So you've been charged under a terrorism law and guideline in this country without committing a terrorist attack.
So this is someone re-entering the country. So you've gone on holiday. Let's just put this into context. You've gone on holiday. You've gone to Europe or something like that, Spain.
You've gone with your family.
You've gone to your family and you come back, and all of a sudden, for some reason, at a when you're entering back in the country, there's some kind of red flag on your passport or something. They decide under this Schedule 7 to interrogate you and look at your devices. Now, so you've got no choice, basically, because you're coming back home.
Yeah. And
don't forget, they let you leave. They let you leave the country fine.
Yeah, yeah.
They stress you when you come back.
Yeah,
the questions that they ask and the intelligence that they're gathering in those questions, you have no choice but to, you know, you're there, you're with your family. Imagine your wife and kids over there, and they're taken away. You don't know how they are. You don't know how long you're there. They can keep you for up to 24 hours in an interrogation under a Schedule 7.
So how many people do we know this has impacted at this point in time?
I know since 2016, after these visits. Since 2016, I know of about 30 Sikh activists that have been stopped and targeted.
I think, you know, the word activist, people probably think, oh, you're part of, you're a member of a group, you're this, you're that. Yeah. But, you know, activist as a loose term is people who have a passing through the Gurdwara, who sit in Sangat with you, for instance, who, you know, who basically are at the same Sikhi camp or Gurmat camp or whatever. So, you know, this is the thing.
There was a guy, and he was a Munna. He bumped into me at an event, and I didn't know him. And he said, "Buddy, I got stopped coming back from Greece." And I was looking at him thinking, what you been up to? He goes, no. And they were asking me all this stuff about which organizations do I know? What's my views on Khalistan and politics and Amrit Pal and everything under the sun? And I says, "Well, are you which Godboy?" He goes, "Oh, I don't go to the Godboy. I just went to a couple of protests since the farmers' protests." So they're obviously collating CCTV, and we've seen this and we've raised this with the Met and the government, that India House is obtaining intelligence illegally of protesters, and it is then using that to intimidate them. And this is happening to ordinary people. And I think this is why people have that threat now. And I saw some messages come through this morning saying, oh, every time I share something about what's happening in India, I'm getting shadow banned or deleted off social media. These are ordinary people, Bibia, girls, guys, not even Sikh sort of commentators, if you like. And so there is this whole widespread net trying to disrupt and disturb and scare ordinary Sikhs into silence.
It's coming from all angles. It's not just the Schedule 7 border stops. It'll come under illegal raids, under fishing exercises, which we know they did in 2018. It'll come under the extraditions. It'll come under the prevent scheme. They'll scrutinize people's finances. They're coming at all angles. Ofcom, charity commissions. So if we go into charity commissions, how they're disrupting, say Gurdwara is affiliated with a charity commission, they're going to come in. They've been targeting Gurdwara who have Shaheed Singh's pictures. They've been targeting Gurdwara who have got Khalistan banners. They're targeting orgs. I think it was a video that you sent the other day or was publicized about the British High Commissioner in India who had an interview. And he said, even if they're not a charity, we will get the charity commission to investigate them. Even we are looking into investigating where all their finances are coming on from. If you look at how the Indian media, who is mobilizing, their eyes are all on UK organizations and UK activists and how to disrupt their day-to-day lives.
This demonization, I mean, it's almost hilarious in the sense when they talk about funding streams and they love this foreign enemy, you know, the foreign actor, Pakistan funding stream. And, you know, the ironic thing is that these savers are done on shoestring budgets. Yeah, we know the shoestring budgets that they're done on. And it's hilarious that they, even that, you know, those small amounts, they use that. And I saw an interview with Manjpur as well, just bouncing Manjpur, where he's saying how any form of financing, you're sending a donation, you're some money that's come from abroad, how that impacts people in India and Punjab at this point in time. So, you know, the use of funds, whether it's minor, whether it's small donations, whether it's just donation for langar or whatever, it's all being used. But you know what's interesting, Deepa, offline before we got into this, we had this conversation about how we've seen the landscape of events change. And this has all sort of been post 2014, 2015, where there's this been shift for, and we perhaps haven't thought about it before, these Sikh networks and everything like that. And I don't think all of them, I don't think they're not sinister. And I'm not saying that a lot of them be started with really good intentions. And they are still running with good intentions, but there is a reason why we're seeing this increase in networks in government sort of events to take away the limelight from Sikh issues, for instance.
Revelations in 2014, they've started to open up Vaisakhi at Parliament and events like that, where they're bringing people, they're rewarding people with OBEs, MBEs, and even up to a CBE, you're becoming commanders of a British Empire. You know, you have to have done, I would say, in my language, and you lot might be scrutinizing me and others might, you must have done a lot of Gaddari to get to those positions, to get CBEs. You're a commander for the British Empire. You're pushing their agendas in the hardline Pantic circles. Like these rewards that the British always do. And what you've just said, and it was our conversation offline, they propped up over the last 10 years, ever since the revelations, to silence and marginalize the Pantic and hardcore Sikh activists and Sikh Pracharaks and Shahidi Smargams and the Shaheed Singh Prachar. And they've propped up these Langar aid services, which are all over the place now. And they keep propping them and keep propping them and pushing everyone to make out that that's all that Sikhs are. And I'm not taking nothing away from those sevadars who genuinely do that from their dil. But when you have to be silent on actual Pantic issues and you're not support and you're only doing that, you're being pushed by Sarkars to do those things. That's one. then through Prachar groups and Vidyalaya, they're pushing certain messages. And like I said, the Vaisakhi events where they're bringing people to parliament, you know, all of this happened in the last 10 years. So it was a massive shift change in the Bantik circles that you've seen how the Prachars change and the agendas are changing. And these are propping up. And anyone who speaks on Khalistan, Chirasi is being marginalized and demonized. And those people are making sure that they're disrupting those activists' lives. So the full focus is on that, and anyone else is being rewarded. And I haven't even started on state funding yet. You know, when you're looking at, I've looked at this, and I'll give a couple of snippets on here, but we want to save this. In 2018 and 2017, when Jaggi was picked up and they did the raids, they had to counter and oppose, and a lot of funding from West Midlands Police went to Sikh charities and Sikh organisations. Why were those of the same organisations that are propped up doing similar work, apparently doing similar work, but they were funded by the state? So it is to oppose us, and these are propped up by the state to say these are your representatives. So they push that agenda. So there is a push. It's a very grey area to point out individually he's a Gaddar, he's not. No, but you can see from the rewards and the state funding where it's going and who's being demonized.
I think for balance, I think I'm just going to bring some balance in here anyway. So when we use words Gaddar and stuff, obviously people would have their guards up and stuff. So again, it's just, it's opinion. You know, in terms of Queen's King's Awards or whatever we want to call it, OBs, MBs, CBEs or whatever, you know, there are people out there that have done decades and decades of work for the community and they are awarded this. I think the concern I would say around this that I find is that very prematurely and very early on in people's lives, they've obtained OBs and MBEs, which seem odd and strange. They're not odd and strange. We know why they're there. So someone in their 20s and 30s, you know, for very minor light work has been awarded an OB. And I mean, we have an OB here. We've got Devinderjit Singh who got an OB back in the 2000s, you know, in the early days when they weren't given out as confetti, when they were basically only given out to various individuals. So there is this thing about OBs and MBs now being used as a way of propelling people forward to be government, on government tables. And that's the concern.
I wanted to say, it's the timing of it. Mm-hmm. It's the timing of the narratives being pushed, the government reports, who's speaking in these government reports? Jazz mentioned earlier, the changing nature of activism. You know, who's writing these reports? Who was quoted in those reports that are receiving rewards and awards and state funding? And that's what I was more referring to. Just wanted to clear that from my side as well.
I'm just going to come in and probably make my final contribution. I'll give you one small story and then one message. So the small story goes back to 2004. So BBC journalists traveled to Punjab. And while he was in Punjab, he met the Director General of Police. He then met Indian intelligence officers. And he wasn't a Sikh. He was a non-Sikh BBC reporter that went there legitimately. And he met intelligence officers. And he said, I said to them, how does the Indian police operate when it comes to Sikhs in the UK? And they said to him, where are you from? He said, Huddersfield. So they said, oh, Huddersfield. They pulled out a list of around 200 to 300 people, Sikhs in Huddersfield. This is 2004. And he said, yeah, but Sikhs aren't that active in Huddersfield. So how can you have a list of 200 to 300 Sikhs from Huddersfield? He said, we don't just have a list. We have a file on every single one of them. And what we do is, when we find out they're coming to India, we'll stop them and we make money. We're not scared of them. We're not worried about them. We've just collected intel on them. Now, 20-odd years later, let me just go back. What they did say in 2004 is there is a handful of people, you can count them on one hand, who, if they ever entered Indian airspace, they would not go back. This was in 2004. The trouble is their hands are running out now. There are too many Sikh activists 20 years later because of their own actions. Now I wanted to give the message. And this message was, I told you about somebody who called me that was worried traveling to India, etc. And it's partly linked to what Jaskaran from Canada said at the Gurpurb event in Parliament. And it's really, Sikhs that are listening to this podcast might be worried about all this collusion, people that work for British intelligence or work for the Indians, etc. But just think about our gurus. Guru Nanak Dev Ji didn't just start the concept of langar. He went to prison. Shirin Patsa went to prison. Our gurus were in prison because they stood up against injustice. And therefore, we're just mere Sikhs of our gurus. And therefore, you know, with all this negativity and all this collusion, I go back to our gurus taught us, if we want to be Sikhs, we have to raise our voices. We have to talk about the injustice. We have to get to the truth. And therefore, we're all going to go one day. I mean, I had relatives phone me up saying, what are you doing? And I said, what will be. I'm not going to change what I do. And we do need to send that message via the podcast to Sikhs that are listening, is always remember what our gurus, from the first guru through to the 10th guru, and what Guru Granth Sahib Ji teaches us, which is always stand by the truth, call out injustice, because that's why we exist, you know, for that simple reason. And it's not just about Sikhs, it's about Sarbat Tapala. But when we see something is wrong, Sikhs should not be scared, should not be frightened, because ultimately, you know, our gurus gave their lives.
I think that's an important point, because ultimately, whilst there is a targeting, and it is scary when you read things about assassinations, poisoning, assassination plots, and hit lists, and the infiltration to the degree it is now, and you realize Indian agents, Goyal, who was the Raw agent, other Sidhu and the IB agent, were all exposed in that period of 2015. How active they were in the UK. There are a lot of people who were engaging with these people. I say a lot. There was a handful of Sikh within that leadership roles who were engaging. As you touched on, Max, some people won't even know they were being used. Some people may have been compromised and therefore forced under duress to. And that's how agencies work, right? Not everyone does it for their joy. Some do it for financial gain. Some do it for elevation. Some are purely infiltrated. That's their agenda. They are from that state. And some are forced into doing it. And some don't even know they're doing it. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole degree of how they gather intelligence. But for us living in the UK, we have to face the challenge head on. It's the only way we can. We can't just sit away and shy away and hide away, because then there'll be nothing to hand over. And this week we started a campaign, which I do want to touch on, a letter campaign to our MPs, because whilst news is global of what the US indictments, what the US government is doing, what the Canadians, what the Australians are doing, we are all witnessing the silence and complicity of the British government. Now, there are 650 MPs in Parliament. Not all of them have Sikh constituents or may even follow the news. So it is incumbent on every single one of our listeners to write to your MP, informing them or highlighting them to what's gone on. Even if it just puts in the back of their mind that bloody hell, India's been doing all this and has been called out by the US, by Canada, by Australia, actually it gives us some credibility in the fight that we're fighting from the front line. And that letter, the template's available on the Sikh Federation website, so sikhfeduk.com. Go to the campaigns page. There's a standard letter on there. It's also available on all the social media, Sikh Network, Sikh Federation, Sikh Youth UK. Just copy and paste that letter. Send it to your MP. We have made it so easy for you to lobby and pressure and inform your MP. But if we do nothing, if we just sit there silently watching and observing, then we are not as guilty, but we are also not true to our own cause. And that's the least we can do, because the more noise we make, the more the spotlight shines, the quicker this sort of stuff will stop. And that's our only weapon against this in the face of these superpowers. And with Gudusabs Kirpa, we're holding our own. So this is another urgent request, because this is time critical with Christmas and the recess coming very soon. We do want everybody to go onto the website, seekfeduk.com, go to the campaigns page, download the letter, and send it to your MP.
Yeah.
Really good work, and it's important that everyone gets behind these campaigns, because it's about the targeting of Sikh activists. Everything we're discussing today regarding the collusion, it all comes very transparent in that. So we need to put pressure on. So not are they going to do anything for us? Are they not? That's we're making them aware of our issues, and everyone needs to stick to that line and hold that line. I think it's very vital and important.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, we're wrapping up now, and those were your final comments, just in case you didn't realize. But you know, a few things I just want to point on is that, you know, we're not sitting here, we're not conspiracists, and we're not sitting here, you know, with tinfoil hats and, you know, saying, oh, you know, making all of this up and just trying to create that kind of, you know, hypersensitivity out there to issues and stuff like that. These are genuine concerns, and we've seen it. People are experiencing it, and people who perhaps were not activists or didn't consider themselves activists, or even the arm sick, is having to deal with these issues. And I want to just mention something that I had a conversation with, I'll be very loose about the specifics, with an individual who works for government, and they're concerned with this repression, and they're concerned how it's impacting them as individuals, their own well-being, not just as a community, but as individuals, their well-being. So this repression is across the board. It's not just impacting those that put themselves forward, because people look at them and think, you deserve it. You put your neck on the line anyway. This is, you know, this comes with the territory. Armed people who go to India now are not disclosing that they're going to India to visit Punjab. You know, there are people that I know that have gone there and, you know, literally not mentioned it to anyone that they visited Punjab, not put photos on social media, nothing, and then come back. And then you only find out in conversation, but I didn't see you for a couple of weeks while I've been in Punjab. But they're having to do that in that way because they're so concerned that their trip to Punjab might end up becoming a difficult one, as we've seen with people like examples like Jaggi. And on another note, you know, we're talking about collusion, we're talking about intelligence gathering and all of that. You know, we're not going to stop people. We're not saying do not engage with the establishment and the authorities. We're not saying do not engage, but you are representing your community. You're not representing your interests. If you're engaging with the police and police forces, you're representing the community. It's in the community's interest that you're engaging with them, not in your own interests. And that is the concern that we currently have with certain organizations and groups being set up that are being used as conduits, as buffers, or to raise profiles of individuals only so that they get whatever recognition they want. So those are the concerns that we have as well. But, you know, it's been an informative conversation. I think we probably do need to give more context and probably have an additional podcast on this as well, because I think there's still more context to be provided. But hopefully the listener gets a feel of the concerns that we have in the UK at the moment as a Sikh community and how this is all going. So thank you, Jas Singh, Dabinderjit Singh, and thank you, Deepa Singh, for joining us on this podcast. Waheguru Ji Ka Khalsa.
Khalsa, Waheguru Ji Ki Fateh.
Welcome to the Sikh Network Podcast, a weekly podcast discussing current and topical issues affecting Sikhs across the global diaspora.